All right, welcome to everyone, especially those of you that might be listening to this at some point on the internet. This is Concept 29, Proactive Faith. All right, last week we talked about increasing your faith. And increasing your faith is something that occurs on two levels. First of all, it involves letting God handle the challenges that you're facing, as opposed to you trying to fix them or work them out yourselves. So in other words, it involves putting your challenges into God's hands. And then secondly, it involves God developing the faith in you to trust Him as you are putting things in His hands, so that you're not pulling things off the altar once you dedicate them to Him and then trying to work them out yourself, getting caught between doubt and fear and getting caught between faith and between doubt. And so we all have challenges that are kind of constantly in front of us. And so we want to keep the faith perspective grid in front of us. And that is, God, this is your problem, not mine. And number two, you're going to work this out in your own time and in your own way. And in the meantime, I need a calm heart to respond to this in an attitude of mature faith. So I need your help in handling the circumstance and also calming my heart and keeping me at peace while you're taking care of the situation. So we do battle on these two fronts. Now, where we've been so far is here. We've done 5 weeks, and we're talking about the concept of living by faith. The righteous man should live by faith. The eyes of faith, Jesus' exasperation over little faith in the hearts of his followers. Last week, we talked about the apostles' prayer, Lord, increase our faith. How does that work? And then tonight we're going to talk about proactive faith. Now, this is one of my more favorite concepts, and I like talking about this because I do find it always helpful to me to go through this. But I also think there's some insight here that you don't normally hear talked around the body of Christ, and I think is useful and beneficial. So with some expectation, let's jump into the proactive faith idea. All right, our core verse is Habakkuk 2:4. Found in the Minor Prophet, the righteous man shall live. In other words, everything in his life is according to faith. And that verse is repeated 3 times in the New Testament. And it's upon this verse that the apostolic writers build doctrines, major doctrines, doctrinal themes that are great advantage to us. We also talked about increasing your faith and realizing that faith and doubt cancel one another out. And so when we talk about increasing our faith, that means doubt must decrease so that faith might increase. And as we're processing doubts internally, we want to work them through and transfer those that lack of trust to faith, which is an exercise of trust. And the one and the other, they're always working against each other. And so increasing our faith means to build our faith and to dismantle the doubt within us. So last week we looked at prayers for increased faith, and the summary of Concept 28 is that faith is increased when we rely upon God to manage our trials while simultaneously relying upon Him to develop within us a restful belief in His loving care. So this is the goal we're heading toward through faith, is letting God manage what's His to manage, and at the same time creating a trustful, restful attitude in us while He is working those things out. All right, so tonight we're going to look at Concept 29. Why don't we shut those doors, because people are here during, just crack it, Sue, in case Linda's grandkids need to come find her, and we'll shut them, because we got people in and out setting up for VBS, which begins tomorrow. Now, where have you seen this before? There are 3 circles that all of life's circumstances fall into one of these 3 circles. And we're going to talk tonight about developing a proactive faith, and these circles will help us build a conceptual framework in which to do that. Now, we have 3 circles in which all circumstances fall. There is the circle of control, there is the circle of influence, and then there is the circle of concern. Now, let's talk about these 3 circles. Okay? Sure. The bigger, broader circle is circle of concern. Then inside that, we have the circle of influence. And then inside those 2 circles, we have this core, which is circle of control. Now, we want to define what falls into these circles, what falls into these three categories, and then talk about our faith response to that. All right, everybody caught up? Suze, you ready? All right, now, clarifications. The circle of concern is everything that can affect your life directly and indirectly. The circle of concern is everything that affects your life directly and indirectly, and that refers to most everything, all circumstances that are around us. That's a circle of concern. So we're concerned about these things because they do affect us one way or the other, either directly or indirectly. Now, within the circle of concern, there's a smaller circle called the circle of influence. And this refers to everything that we can affect, shape, or influence to some degree. The circle of concern refers to everything that affects us, whether we can affect it or not. The circle of influence refers to the things we can affect, shape, or influence. And then thirdly, you have the circle of control, which is inside the circle of influence, and that is the circle that refers to everything that we can affect directly. We can affect it directly. Now, circle of concern, we can affect things. These are things that affect us. Circle of influence is the things that we can affect. And then the circle of control are the things we can control. So it refers to, circumstances that fall into these three different categories. So here's how it works. The circle of concern, we don't have any control over. The circle of influence, we have indirect control over. And the circle of control, we have direct control over. The circle of concern refers to things that affect us, but we have no control over them. The circle of influence refers to things that we have some indirect control over, and we call that indirect control influence. We can influence it, but we can't control it. But then the circle of control, the inner bullseye, the core, is something you do have direct control over. Okay, now let's try to think of some things that fall into these categories and shape this a little bit, all right? So what are some things that you would say fall into the circle of concern? Things that affect you, but you really don't have much control or influence over it. What would fall into that category? A circle of concern.
The direction the church is taking.
All right, that's true. Your wife? No, your wife. Your wife falls into the circle of influence. You can't influence her. You can't control her, right, Judy? but you can influence that, right, Ray? Okay. All right, let's circle of concern. What else? What affects you but you can't control it? Give me an example.
Nuclear proliferation.
All right. Government mischief?
Yes.
How about the weather? You know what's going on, and it affects you. It affects your mood sometimes. It affects what you do, but we don't have any control over it. We can't affect it. It just happens. All right? Let's go to the circle of influence. What are some things that you can influence, but you can't control them?
Kids.
Yes. You have children. You can influence them, but you can't control them. You cannot dictate to them what they will do or they will not do. Sometimes you get informed without being asked. So, yeah, that's how it goes. Another circle of influence. What's something else that your circle of influence? How about neighborhood crime?
If you read the Bible every day.
All right. That's circle of control. We're going to talk about that. All right, circle of influence. How about how disorganized a PTA is where you put your kids in school? You can influence that, but you can't control it. All right, how about your health? You can't influence that. You can't control it, but you can influence it, your health. And we're going to give you some of these in more detail in a minute. And then the circle of control, these are things you direct. You can control it. It's within your power.
Money.
To some degree, yes.
Huh?
How you spend it, yes, that is true. What else?
Your actions.
Sort of.
I mean, what you choose to do.
Yep, okay. Anybody else think of anything? Circle of control. These are things you can directly control them.
Thoughts.
Pardon?
Thoughts.
Your thoughts. All right. Okay, let's go through some examples here. All right. Pardon? All right. Circle of concern. All that affects you. Here we go. You can write these in your blanks if you haven't already. All right. The national debt. That's somebody else's. Controls that, and it may bother you, it may worry you, but you can't control it. Nuclear arms treaty, we already talked about that one. The weather, the stock market, favorite sports team. We get a favorite team and we want them to win, so we get all caught up in how they perform on the field, and it defines our weekend, and it influences us, but we don't have any influence over it. Okay, that's your circle of concern. All right, now these are things that affect you that you don't have much control over. All right, the circle of the second coming of Christ. Yeah, that's a good example. We will be influenced by that, but we certainly don't have any control over it. So these are things, and there are lots more, that affect us, and we have little or no effect upon it. Okay? The next circle, the circle of influence. These are things that you can affect or you can influence. The other things affect you. Now, these are things you can affect. Okay? Neighborhood crime. You can affect that. Lock your car. Keep an eye on your neighbor's house. Organize a crime watch. Do things like that. Can't control it, but you can influence it. PTA disorganization. Or any organizations you're a part of, for that matter. Corporate, the department you work in, if it's not performing well, you can affect that and influence it by you performing well or not performing well, but you can't assume responsibility for all your department's your department's total performance. Your children's decision making. We're free moral agents. We have the power to decide. Within limits, of course, but we do have the power to decide. And we can influence them. You can put food before your children, but you can't necessarily make them eat. And then your health, what kind of food you put in your body, how much exercise you regularly get, when you create space in your schedule for good, healthy exercise. And then lastly, your marriage. Certainly you can influence your marriage, but you can't control it. And you want to exercise all the positive influence you can, but after a certain point, it's not within your control. All right, everybody caught up? All right, now let's go to the circle of control. Now, these are things you can affect directly. You can direct these things. All right, your attitude is the one thing in life, and there are a few others, but this is at the top of the list. You can control how you choose to respond to life around you.
And how you spend your time.
Well, we're coming to that. Remember the prisoners of war who were stripped of their dignity and in total oppression, and the ones who survived discovered over time that there was one thing that their captors couldn't control, and that was their response to what was being done to them. They had absolute control over that. And once you discovered that, people were empowered to survive. The ones that never discovered it eventually gave up, and many of them perished or died. But our attitude is something we can directly control. Secondly, your commitment as a spouse. You can control your commitment in marriage. You can't control your spouse, but you can control your commitment to your spouse. My sister-in-law once said to me, if you go into marriage thinking that if it doesn't go well, you just quit, you're doomed before you start. So you got to go into it with the appropriate commitment levels if you expect it when the going gets hard to progress. Okay, your job performance. You can't control the department you work within, but you certainly can affect your own job performance within that department. Your weight, we can determine. We can control that to a large degree. Sometimes we have health challenges that are disruptive, but generally speaking, we can control what we put into our mouths. Nobody forces us to eat high caloric food. Your time. Now, we don't have total control over our time because factors do come in that affect our time, but we have a good bit of control over it. And then your behavioral choices. You can choose your actions to a large degree. All right, now these are your circle of concern, your circle of influence, and your circle of control. Now, how does God want us to exercise faith in all these three circles? How does that work and what does that look like? So let's explore this idea a little bit and see if we can make sense out of it. Now, this is what's called a reality lens. And this is a lens through which you see your circumstances. And you want to be able to see your circumstances as they fall into these three circles. And that will dictate how you choose to respond to it. In other words, if you expend a lot of energy trying to control something you can't control, you just wasted a whole bunch of time. You just wasted a whole bunch of emotional energy trying to control something that's not in your control. All right. On the other hand, if you wasted all of your energy trying to control what you can't control and you didn't control your own reaction to the circumstance, you're not going to be happy with the result of that because you abandoned control of what you could influence and attempted exercise you couldn't exercise control over something you couldn't control and you wasted a whole bunch of energy. So let's put this reality lens up here and you'll see how this thing works. I like this. This is really good. Now, we've got your circle of concern, circle of influence, and your circle of control. Okay? All right. Now, are these written in for you, or you got to write these in? They're already in? You got to write them in. All right, flip over, Thomas. Next page should be right there. Okay, there's your reality lens. All right, you got circle of concern, influence, and control. All right, we're going to take those three circles. Now, first column up. What's in the circle of concern? All things that can affect you. These are all things that can affect you. The circle of influence, all things that you can affect. And then the circle of control, all things that you can direct. All things that you can direct. So, these three circles interact with your life in different ways. One circle, it's everything that affects you. The second circle is all the things that you can affect. And then the third circle is all things that you can control or direct. So we're going to divide those up accordingly. Now, notice that our reaction differs to these three circles. To the circle of concern, by nature, we are reactive. All we can do is react to what's happening around us that influences us. The circle of influence, our response is interactive. These are things that we can affect, and we interact with these circumstances, people, and forces, so to speak, in an interactive way. We can't control them, but we can affect them, so we interact with them. Your circle of control, the things that you can direct, our response is to be proactive. Proactive. Reactive, interactive, and proactive. Okay? So these circles, seeing these circumstances through the realistic lens helps us determine our appropriate reaction to them. Circle of concern, we tend to be reactive. Circle of influence, we're interactive. Circle of control, we are proactive. Now let's use a sports analogy. In the circle of concern, this is like being a fan at a ball game. You watch the game, but you don't have any direct influence over the outcome of the game other than cheering a little bit and hoping that the people on your team hear you. The circle of influence, the person who can influence indirectly is a coach. The coach can influence directly what's happening on the playing field, but he's not out there. So he only can influence from a distance what's happening. So he has an interactive relationship with the players on the field, but he's not on the field, and he cannot control what happens. Thirdly, you have your circle of control, and that refers to the players who are on the field. These people have control of the outcome of that game. They will determine what happens. So the circle of concern, we're like a fan. Circle of influence, we're like a coach. But the circle of control, we are a player. We're in play on the circle of control, and so we want to understand that distinction. Now, next column is this. Notice the results that our investment of energy will get in these three different circles. No matter how much energy we invest in the circle of concern, because these are things that generally affect us and we can't affect them, we will have minimum results to what we invest in those things that are out in our circle of concern. If we spend a lot of time worrying about the federal deficit, it's going to be wasted energy, because you and I have virtually no influence and certainly no control over the rising national debt. And that can upset you, and it upsets a lot of people. But if we put a lot of energy into that, you're going to get minimum return on your investment. The circle of influence, you're going to get mixed results. You can invest a certain amount of energy in those that you influence, but you're not always going to get the results that you want. Sometimes you're going to get the result you are looking for, and sometimes you're going to get the complete opposite. Sometimes your kids will do exactly what you want them to do. It'll make you feel great about being their particular parent. And then there are times when your kids will do the exact opposite of what you thought they should do, and you're going to be totally disappointed. Now, did you try to influence their decision? Yes. In some cases, you're wonderfully successful, and other times, not successful at all. You don't control their choices. So you interact with them to a degree, but you have to leave the end result in the hands of someone else, because all you can do is influence that. So you get mixed results. Now, the circle of control. These are things you can control and influence directly. So all the time and energy that you put into the circle of control, you're going to maximize results, because these are things that you primarily, more than anyone, you have the ability to control those particular things. So here's our faith reaction to these three circles. Final column. Here we go. With the circle of concern, we have what's called an observant faith. In other words, when it comes to the weather, we're going to trust that the picnic we have planned coming up for Saturday, that it's going to be nice weather, and that the Lord, we're going to pray about it, we're going to ask the Lord to provide us with just the right kind of weather to have a great time. So we're going to have an observant faith. We're going to watch the weather, and we're going to hope it works out. Okay? When it comes to the reduction of the federal deficit, we're going to pray that our politicians handle this responsibly. And we have a president now who's trying to address it, and we're going to pray that God helps him do that. But all we can do is observe from a distance and hope it works out. Circle of influence are things that you can influence, so therefore your faith is an attentive faith. You pay close attention to what's happening in the lives of your children. You pay close attention to what's happening in your corporation that you work for, or the company that you work for, because the overall performance of the company will determine what you get paid, how many days of vacation you might get if you get a bonus, and whether you even have a job or not. But you can't control that company. You can influence it. And so you want to have an attentive faith. You want to pay attention to what's going on there, but there's only so much influence you have over that. Now, the circle of control. This is where you want to exercise an active faith. An active faith. Because these are things that God has committed into your hands. This is your part of the party. And you want to make sure that you're focused on your part and that you're doing your part, trusting that God is going to do His. And the result is you're going to get a maximum result. Okay? Now, before I go on, Let me see if there's any questions about how you understand this. Does this make sense? Amy?
Attempted faith. So what are we asking? How do we interface with God on that? And observant, we're asking God basically for nice weather or
yeah.
You know, to take care of the situation. How? What's the attentive faith?
Well, attentive faith is like your children are seniors in high school and they got to pick a college. So we're going to go visit 5 colleges, and we're going to pay attention to their decisions. We're going to interact with them about what they liked or didn't like about the schools, but we're going to pay close attention because we want to make sure they pick the right school, one that we can afford. You know how that goes. So we want to be attentive to what's going on here, and we want to go on these college visits with them and meet the people that greet them and look at the dorm facilities and all that other stuff and make sure that everything looks good. That's an attentive faith. And we want to be praying that God leads our children to pick the right school. And so, Lord, it's my child's decision. They maybe have to stay within a framework of a budget, but this is what I hopefully will happen. So we're attentive and we're attuned to that. We're attuned to what's going on. We can influence it, but we can't control it. But this third category now is an active faith because these are things that we can control. And here's where we want to concentrate lots of energy and not get caught up in trying to do somebody else's job or not get caught up in trying to make somebody else's decisions for them. In other words, if you've got a favorite sports school and there's a player that lives in your neighborhood that might go play for that school, now you want to pray that maybe he goes to play for your school, which makes your team a better team. But you don't have a lot of control over what school he picks. So if you invest a lot of time and energy into what school he picks, you might be disappointed with the results. But on the other hand, if let's suppose you are a senior in high school, and I was talking with a couple of girls today over at Willie's, and one's graduated from high school, the other one's going to be a junior, and this senior in college has already picked the college she's going to go to, and she carefully went through a decision-making process to get to the one, and she didn't like the school she picked at first, and we were talking about how when you go visit a college campus, don't just take a cosmetic impression, but drill down into the school, make sure it matches with your major, and it fits your budget, and all those different things. And then the junior, her sister, said, yeah, next year I'm going to be a junior, and I get the family car now that my older sister's going off to college, but I've got to pick a college next year. So she's got to invest a lion's share of energy in that decision because she's going to be ultimately the one who picks the school. And if it ends up to be a dud firecracker of a decision, she's just wasted a lot of her parents' money or her own money if she's paying for her own way through school and have to transfer schools in the middle and start over with a new major and who knows what all. So a lot that goes in that. So this is a decision she wants to put a lot of active energy into and active faith because she has direct control over that. Does that make sense? So when it comes to life circumstances, here's what we want to do is that we don't want to be people who waste a lot of resources, time, energy, and money on things, first of all, that we don't have much control over. Secondly, things we have limited control over. We want to reserve the lion's share of time and energy and resources for the circle of control. In other words, focus your energy there. Let these other things, in the providence of God, let God work them out. Trust Him with these other spheres of influence. Devote your primary energies there. That make sense? Okay, so here's a reality lens, and so what we want to live life with is a proactive faith, one that's proactively interacting with the things that God has placed within our sphere of control and that we are directly responsible for versus the things that belong to somebody else. And where tension and conflict arise a lot of times is when we start meddling in somebody else's circle and we try to influence somebody to do what we want them to do or what we think they should do when that decision ultimately belongs to another person. So we don't want to invest lots of much needed energy elsewhere, but you want to preserve the limited amount of energy you've got, the faith that you've got, for the things you can directly control. Okay, does that make sense? Everybody understanding what we're saying? All right, so we want to, yes, sir, Ray?
There's
Yes?
To me, the gist of what our problem is.
Okay, that works.
We come in this world, you know. Father, why you make me like this? I come up here and be like that.
Yeah. Yeah, so we can invest a lot of energy trying to be something other than the potter has made us to be. And ultimately, what always happens is you end up being yourself, what God made you to be, even though you're trying and expending a lot of energy to be something other than what He made you to be. And that ends up being a lot of wasted energy. When I first became a pastor, I tried to preach like Charles Spurgeon. Spurgeon had command of the English language and used the five senses. He spoke in word pictures. He was an amazing guy. And that was back before they had sound amplification, so we had a barrel chest and a booming voice. My voice doesn't carry at all. It's not a strong voice. And I'm not a preacher. I'm a teacher. And one of the first sermons I preached, this young lady walked up to me and said, "You're a really good teacher." And I was so crushed. Because I didn't want to be viewed that way. I want to be viewed as a preacher, not a teacher. But as time goes on, you end up just being yourself. So what am I doing here on Sunday afternoons? We come together and I teach you the Bible. And I'm motivated to do that. I love doing that because that's who I am. So however the potter shapes you and makes you, you're spitting in the wind if you try to reshape you or remake yourself. That is the gist of what's being said here. Okay, that's good. Right. All right, now. Words of wisdom. Have you ever seen this before? I know this is kind of circulating in the Christian community. And this is a quote from an unknown monk a long time ago. "When I was a young man, I wanted to change the world. I found it was difficult to change the world, so I just tried to change my nation. When I found I couldn't change the nation, I began to focus on my town. When I couldn't change the town as an older man, I tried to change my family. Now, as an old man, I realize the only thing I can change is myself. And then suddenly I realized that if long ago I had changed myself, I would have made an impact on my family. My family and I could have made an impact on our town. That impact could have changed the nation, and I would have changed the world." Now, someone saw this very clearly, whoever this person was, and as they look back on their lives, they wasted a whole bunch of energy, tried to change what they had very limited influence and no control over, as opposed to channeling those energies toward what they could control. So it was an unwise allocation of energy and time, and resources is a better word. Unwise allocation of resources. And this person observed this as life went on. Now let's look quickly at some biblical examples. Remember that David sent to a man named Nabal to request some resources like food, and Nabal sent back to him and said, "I'm not giving you nor your men nothing." And so Nabal made himself odious in the eyes of David. But Nabal's wife realized that David was a powerful king and was about to take care of this man, Nabal, her husband, and Abigail put together a bunch of raisin cakes and food and supplies and met David before David got to her husband and said, "I apologize for my husband's behavior. Put it on me. It's my fault. But please don't hold this against my master." And so this was David's response to Abigail. "Blessed be the Lord God of Israel who sent you this day to meet me. And blessed be your discernment and blessed be you who kept me this day from bloodshed and from avenging my own hand. Nevertheless, as the Lord of God of Israel lives, who has restrained me from harming you or your husband or his men, unless you had come quickly to meet me, surely there would have not have been left to Nabal until morning light as much as one guy, one person." Now, Abigail stepped in between David and her husband. Her husband was clearly at fault because David had protected her husband and his men, and when David asked for help, Nabal didn't return the favor. So Abigail stepped in and said, "Look, I know this is really bad, but why don't you just charge it to my account?" And David had the wisdom to realize that she was an angel from heaven. And so this wife influenced the negative behavior of her husband in such a way that she prevented disaster. And notice that the way she put it was, just blame me for it. She sort of stepped into the situation and exercised what influence she could, and it had a good result. And Nabal died of a heart attack a few days later, and Abigail ended up married to David. Now, she didn't bargain for that, but that's what ultimately happened because she behaved so wisely. She handled it wisely. Abigail covered her husband's disrespect for King David. 1 Samuel 25. All right, let's look at another example. Remember when Jesus was talking to Peter around the charcoal fire after his resurrection? And he said, Peter, one day someone's going to take you where you don't want to go, which was a reference to Peter's death, according to the Gospel of John. And so Jesus was saying to him, Peter, you're going to die in a way that's not a desirable death. And so Peter responded by saying, well, Jesus, what's going to happen to John? What's going to happen to him? And Jesus says, what's it to you? That ain't your business, Peter. What's going to happen to your friend? I'm talking about what's going to happen to you. And how many times have you ever had somebody say to you when you were kind of nosying around in things, somebody says, well, what's it to you? In a snarly way. What's it to you? Kind of like, this ain't no business of yours. And that snarky tone of voice is kind of hurtful, and you get pushback. But what they're trying to say is, why are you going there? Why are you meddling there? That's not really your business. And so Jesus said to Peter, mind your own business. You be concerned about how you're going to die. Let me take care of this guy. This is my domain of influence, not yours, Peter. So stay in your traffic lanes. That's what he was saying. Respect boundaries here. Another example. All right. In Galatians 6, 4, and 5, it says, let each one examine his own work, and then he will have reason for boasting in regards to himself alone, not in regard to another. Each one shall bear his own load. Now, this word for load here means your share of responsibility, what belongs to you. Each person has to bear their own share of responsibility. This is what God has allotted to you, and you don't need to be examining your work in comparison to other people's work, or in comparison to other people's influence. Don't go there. That game of comparison is a false standard of measurement. Don't do that. Measure against yourself. If you've done your best, that's what you're going to be satisfied. And if you've done your best, you'll have no regrets. Then your best efforts may compare favorably to somebody else, may compare unfavorably to another person. Don't play that comparison game. Each man will bear his own load. Did you do your best before God? If so, you don't have any regrets, and don't worry about what's happening with somebody else's sphere of influence. All right, here's another one. This is Psalm 131, and I don't know why this is jaded to the left. I don't know what's going on with that. Sorry about it. In this psalm, it says, O Lord, my heart is not proud, nor my eyes haughty, nor do I involve myself in great matters or in things too difficult for me, things that aren't mine to worry about. Surely I've composed and quieted my soul. That's what I'm responsible for, is my own heart. I've composed and quieted my soul like a weaned child against his mother. My soul is like a weaned child within me. O Israel, hope in the Lord from this time forth and forever. But notice that the psalmist is saying, Lord, I keep my fingers out of things that don't belong to me. I don't get myself caught up in matters that are too big or too difficult for me. I worry about myself. I compose and quiet my own soul. I let somebody else worry about the things that belong to them. So you can see from this psalmic prose here, poetry, he's saying, don't let me get myself caught up in things that don't belong to me. Now look at this. This is 1 Thessalonians 4:11. Here's another one of those statements that you find people using every day, and it's found in the Bible. It says, make it your ambition to lead a quiet life and attend to your own business. Work with your hands, just as we commanded you. Now notice that Paul here says, if you want to be ambitious with your life, here's what your ambition should look like. First of all, aim to lead a quiet life. Don't aim to be somebody famous. Don't aim to be somebody wealthy. Don't aim to be somebody who's all-American. But make it your ambition to lead a quiet, simple life. That's the life that God has given to most of us. And within that quiet life, attend to your own business. Mind your own business. Concern yourself with what belongs to you. Work with your hands just as we commanded you. Another phrase that's found and in everyday vernacular, once again found in the Bible, like Jesus coming to Peter, what's it to you? All right, now, two more verses. In terms of managing your time, look at what Jesus says here. Therefore, do not be anxious for tomorrow will take care of itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own. Now, is it wise, Linda, to waste a lot of time and energy concerned about what's going to happen tomorrow? How much control you got over what's going to happen tomorrow? Minimal. You might have some, but it's minimal. In other words, God gives us time increments in seconds and minutes and hours, and you use the time in the increment that God gives it to you, and don't worry about tomorrow. Worrying about tomorrow is the interest you pay on being concerned about something other than the present. And it's a waste of time. I remember one time standing on a sidewalk when I was a kid. I was in a phone booth. And these two women behind me were talking. And this one lady said to another one, the other one, she said, "Why are you worried about tomorrow? You can't do a thing about it. Each day has enough trouble of its own. You just worry about today." And I'm standing in the phone booth thinking, that's really good. I was 12 years old probably. I thought, wow, that makes total sense. Then I become a Christian at age 20, and what do you know? It's right there in the Bible. She was just quoting the Bible. And the point is, we only can control and even influence the present, not the future. And certainly, we can't go back and rework the past. So if we expend lots of energy regretting what's happened in the past, you're just wasting your time. Move on. But at the same time, don't get ahead of yourself either, because today's resources are for today, not tomorrow. God will give you resources to handle tomorrow. Deal with your today. So another great verse about respecting time boundaries here. Don't allocate energy in directions that you don't have any control over. And then here is Philippians 4, 6, and 7. It says, be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which surpasses all comprehension, will guard your hearts and minds in Christ Jesus. Now let's look at this verse closely for a quick second. All right, here this verse gives us permission to be anxious for what percentage of life? Zero. Anxiety is wasted energy. Be anxious for nothing. When something begins to cause anxiety within us, we're supposed to lay that down. How do we offload that anxious feeling? But everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, put the request at God's feet. Most of what we're anxious about is in our circle of concern. You can't control that. God can control the circle of concern. You can't. So what we do is we pray and we give these big matters that are too big for us, we put them in God's hands because He's the only one that ultimately can control them. We don't waste energy on that stuff. And then here's what God does when we give to Him our burdens. He exchanges that anxiety, our anxiety, with His peace. Be anxious for nothing. Pray about it. And the peace of God will supplant your anxiety, and this surpasses all of your understanding, and it will fort. The word guard here means to fortress. It means to build a fortress around that protects you and makes you feel safe. So when we put the things in God's hands that belong to Him that we can't control or even influence, when we do that, we put those things, we lay them at God's feet. In exchange for our anxiety, He gives us peace. He gives us a peace that is much bigger than anything we can understand. We feel a peace and we don't know why, but we just do because we know God is in control and we're not. And that peace is like a fortress around your heart. It protects you from adversarial reactions and emotions. It fortresses you in the adversarial things out. And that's how God wants us to manage anxiety. And we live in the age of anxiety, the age where we're under so much constant pressure. And if we took this verse seriously, we could offload a whole bunch of it. Now, let's go back to our circles. With a circle of concern, you have an observant faith. We observe the weather, we observe the federal deficit, we observe the world government interactions. We can't control it. We entrust it to God. We pray about it in faith, and we let God work it out. That's His business, not ours. The circle of influence, we pay attention to it. We're attuned to it. It's things like our marriage. It's like our children. It's like our jobs. It's like our neighborhoods. These are things that matter to us. We're concerned about them. We're attuned to them. We try to influence them where we can, but where we can't, we don't get upset about it. We don't get bothered about it. We leave it in God's hands ultimately that He's going to bring good as a result. And we pray and leave it there. And then in the circle of control, that's where you exercise a very active faith. You pray about it, and then you make choices and you exercise the control God gives you as positively as you possibly can. Concentrate your energies here, and this is where you get maximum results. Squandering your energies is where you concentrate yourself on things that belong to someone else and you neglect the things that belong to you. The end result is going to be lose-lose for everybody. You're not going to be happy with the result. So a proactive faith distinguishes these circles and concentrates the lion's share of their resources on the circle of control and an active faith. All right, the righteous man shall live by faith. So we exercise faith in all three of these circles, but it's a different type of faith in each of the circles because of how we interact with these different circumstances. All right, so the circle of faith, control, and influence, all of these things, we live by faith. We entrust them to God, and that trust looks different depending on the circumstances. All right, here's your prayer for proactive faith. Lord, grant that I may live proactively by faith and not reactively by doubt, fear, or anxiety. Give me the power to affect what I can, the grace to accept the things I cannot, and the wisdom to know the difference. Enable me to live by faith one day at a time, one moment at a time, embracing my challenges as stepping stones to growth. Taking as Jesus did this fallen world as it is, not as I would have it to be, trusting that ultimately you will make all things right. It's all going to work out in the end. God's got it. By faith I place all things in your loving hand so that I may be generally happy in this life and supremely happy with you forever in the next. So this prayer kind of covers all those bases. And this is what's called a proactive faith. Living your life, concentrating it where you have the most control and influence, and letting God handle the rest. Not overly involving yourself where you don't belong. So, in summary, concept 29. Proactive faith is distinguishing God's responsibility for mine in the affairs of everyday life and then responding wisely. Being wise about how you interact with life, knowing how much of it really is in God's hands versus how much of it is in yours. Does that make sense? All right. I have to be somewhere in a few minutes, so I'm going to make my exit. So let me ask you.